We're having a special class on Brit Milah. We have a mitzvah. Hashem told Avraham Avinu. And then Hashem reiterated it to the Jewish people when they left Mitzrayim, that we have to circumcise our male children. What is a circumcision? That's part of what we will be discussing tonight. There are medical benefits to being circumcised. But until 70 years ago, we didn't know that. For the last 3,500 years, for the last over three millennium, the non-Jews have been tormenting us and saying, why do you do that? You're mutilating the body. Even today, there are organizations that will say, leave the child his free choice, let him decide if he wants to be circumcised or not. It's interesting that we're doing an act where the child is a partner in a partnership without even knowing it. He's starting his first mitzvah. No one asked him, right? So we do not do the Brit Milah for medical benefits, even though there are medical benefits. You will almost never hear of a Jew who has cancer in the male organ. I'm not talking about testicle cancer. I'm talking about cancer in the gland. Because non-Jews will often get cancer. We'll explain why later. And Jews won't, because the circumcision helps Jews that, you know, Jews almost never get infections in the gland. The UN funded the voluntary circumcision of millions of people in Africa to help prevent the spread of AIDS. Because today we know that when a person is intimate with someone who has AIDS and they are uncircumcised, then they will more likely contract AIDS after one or two or three times that they have intercourse. Whereas if they are circumcised, it'll take more times. The odds are less that they'll contract it with every time that they are intimate. They can still get AIDS. It just might take 50 times that they're together with that party as opposed to once or twice. Being that people, AIDS spreads not because people are faithful with their wife, so they decided that if they circumcise people in Africa, then that will help prevent the spread of AIDS. So again, it's not that people won't contract AIDS, it's that it'll just take a little longer statistically, and sometimes that's enough. So today we know of many medical benefits to being circumcised. We will also discuss the medical benefits of being circumcised the Jewish way, as opposed to the hospital's way. But all of that is not why we do it. We're doing it because we have a mitzvah. We've been doing it for 3,500 years. We've been doing it when we didn't know what the answer to all the questions were. And until today, we don't really know the answer to the question. The fact that we know there are benefits doesn't tell us why God told us to do it. Today, we know there are medical benefits. So what is a circumcision? Okay, we'll begin. Let's begin with maybe this pencil, okay? So we know that the male organ has the lower part, that's skin color, and the upper part that's red, that's the gland, okay? That's how a circumcised organ looks. Now, when a baby's born, there's a layer of skin that covers the organ from the stomach all the way to the top. So when you look at a baby's gland, what you see is all skin color. There's another layer that has a hole in it. So if this is the gland and this is the organ and up here is the hole through which a person urinates, when a baby's born, it's covered with a layer of skin that also has a hole. So when you look at an uncircumcised baby, you see all skin color and a hole. So far, so good? Now, under this, is what we know. If we were to take the outer skin and pull it up, it's very flexible, right? You could pull it up and then slice off that piece. So then what ends up happening is you reveal the red part. In a nutshell, that's a circumcision, okay? That's a circumcision in 10 seconds. Now let's understand a little bit better what goes on here. We don't have a whiteboard or anything. Okay. Let's draw, if we are going to take a side angle view of the male organ, okay? So, here's the organ standing, okay? And here's the gland, right? There's a slight rim. Then it comes up,
There's the hole. And continues around. Another slight rim. And down. This is the gland. This is the organ. When the baby's born, so he has a layer of skin, a hole, and the layer goes all the way down to the stomach. Now, in halacha, the skin from here upwards is called orla, foreskin. Technically, medically, you don't see a difference between the skin here and here and here. All you see is one layer of skin going up. But medically, from this point upward, that's called foreskin. So we would have to slice from going around over here. What do? Well, when you look at the gland, you can actually see the protrusion of this little rim, right? There's a rim at the beginning of the gland. So again, the gland in Hebrew, in halachic terms, is called atara, the crown. That's the name of the gland in Hebrew. In Hebrew, the red part is called atara. So you can see a protrusion over here. If you pull down the skin a little bit on a baby, you see the gland protruding over here. And then, if you put your two fingers here and squeeze, so what will happen is the gland will go down and the skin will remain in your two fingers. So let's do that with the pencil for a second so we see what we're doing. Again, here's our gland. Here's the rim, here's the organ, here's the outer skin. Okay, so we come to Mr. Baby. His two legs are here, okay? He's lying down, his head's back here. His two legs, the gland. We align the skin. We look for the protrusion over here. And then when we squeeze, so what ends up happening is the gland goes down. And you end up between your fingers with that amount of skin. The amount of skin that we call in halacha foreskin. Okay? That's the amount I need to cut off. It stays here, and the organ is right here. So in ancient times, they used to hold this and then pull up. And then with their fingers, they would feel to make sure the gland wasn't up here. And then they'd cut right by their fingers. And then about 250 years ago, they said, let's protect the baby. Because it happened too often that when they cut, they'd also cut off the tip of the gland, which is not the end of the world usually, but you don't want to do that. So in order to have greater protection, they developed what we call a magin. I will, Be'ezrat Hashem, bring the instruments here. But when's the next time I see you guys? Next week, Sunday? Thursday, are you guys here?
Thursday night?
So I'll try to remember. Thursday night to bring the instruments. I'll show you everything. The knife, everything. So we put a shield. What's a shield? Basically, all it is a piece of metal that looks like this. Do we have scissors here? We don't have scissors. Okay. Looks like this. Piece of metal, a slit in the middle, and when you have the skin up here and the gland down here, so you take in this shield, you put the skin in through the shield, and then what you end up having is the skin comes out of the top. Who wants to help me here? You hold this, okay? Thank you. We put in the shield, and you end up having this situation where the skin comes out through here, the shield protects that you can't cut the gland down here. You cut, let's take our knife, okay, make believe it was a knife, and what you end up having is the foreskin in your hand, the gland comes back up, and our cut is just down here. So where is the baby bleeding from after the circumcision? Just under the gland, okay? His bleeding is just beneath the gland, because what did we do? Now we'll draw it in the picture. We have our organ, rim. We pulled our skin up to here, right? We squeezed, pulled the skin up, put in the shield here, cut. So then when the skin falls back down, where did I cut? I really cut here. So what I'm going to have is this situation. Cut is here, right? So where's the baby bleeding from? Beneath the gland, right? Well, the bleeding's from here. Yes, gentlemen, can you see the picture? Yes, does that make sense? Are we all together? Yes? Everything's clear? We're okay? Can we move on? Okay. So far, so good. So now you guys know the first half of being Mo'alim. You're almost ready. I wouldn't do your own kids yet, but... Just a second, he was waiting. First, yes, Baruch. Someone else's kids, right. There is a scar. By the time we're done tonight, I'll show you how to recognize the scar. You're right that you don't notice the scar. No, because it all looks the same color. It takes a lot of training, but I'll show you how, and you'll be able to tell. Okay? We'll get there. No, it's a great question. It's an excellent question. Wait, I'll show you. We're not yet ready to learn that. I'll tell you one thing, okay? Based on what we just described, the color of the skin coming from the stomach upward is your natural skin color. Okay? So if you want to see the scar, what you have to do is follow the skin from the stomach going up towards the gland. And then at some point, you will see a change in color. A very slight change in color. It doesn't look like a scar. It looks like skin color of a slightly different shade. But you'll see that. That's answer number one. We will get to a more sophisticated answer later, even though that answer is correct. We'll understand why there are three colors there. Right now, we know two colors. There's the color of one's natural skin from the stomach upward, and the color of the scarring. We will discuss a third color later. Okay? Yes, sir. Yeah, sure, you bury it after. Sure, any part of a human body that comes off, we bury. You don't have to bury your teeth, but yeah, any limb, any organ that comes off deserves to be buried. So the Sfaradim have a custom based on Kabbalistic sources to put it in dirt right away. It says that Amalek, when searching for the foreskins of the Jews, that was a way to harm them spiritually. So there is a Kabbalistic reasoning behind it. We also turn the foreskin inside out. It says that Bilam was able to affect the Jewish people because he was able to see all their foreskins scattered in the desert. Okay, so whatever foreskins he saw, tribe of Levi did, right? It says when you turn it inside out, then no one can harm the person. So whatever that means. So we do that. We turn the foreskin inside out before we bury it.
Okay. The other idea, right, is that there's a halacha of the ger does a brit milah right before Pesach if he's tameh, it's mitameh meh. Going by the opinion that it's not mitameh meh, it's not a, then it wouldn't make sense to bury it. I guess the Kabbalistic understanding would make sense.
It's all rabbinic, the tameh meh. It's Xera. We're dealing with biblical here. Let's continue. So, before we move on, let's talk a little bit about your job as parents. Okay? Now you understand, you have step one of an understanding of what a circumcision is. So, how do you choose a moel? How do you know when to do a circumcision? What are you supposed to do as a parent? So, number one, you have to inform whoever is the Moel of as much information as possible. We don't always do a brit on the eighth day. For example, if a child is born on Shabbat, so generally we still would do a brit on Shabbat, right? How do we count the 8 days? A child was born just the other day, came to the world in the usual way on a Sunday morning. No one here knows Harry Chapin. Okay, on a Sunday morning, a child was born, so Sunday is day one, yes? And when is it going to be day eight? Next Sunday. So if a child is born right now, 9 o'clock in the evening, Israeli time, when is the circumcision going to be?
Yotzeh. We're already at Monday. In Judaism, the night is already the beginning of the next day. So tonight is already Monday. So if a child was born right now, so then from our perspective, he was born Monday. So Monday is day one. The circumcision will be next week on Monday. Okay? What happens if a child is born between sunset and three stars coming out? You got a problem? Call your local Orthodox rabbi. So when your wife is in the delivery room, go, hold it, just a second, it's that time, you don't want this, honey, right? No, I'm joking. Don't do that. You're supposed to be supportive there, and you will ask your local Orthodox rabbi, because it depends if it's on a Friday Shabbat, Shabbat Motzei Shabbat, how we calculate that twilight zone, Rosh Hashanah, right? How do we calculate that questionable time period? So our rule is, number one, the eighth day from when a child is born, which is the same day of the week, the child gets circumcised. Now, if the child was born at 6 p.m. on Sunday, you could still do the circumcision in the morning, next week Sunday, right? No problem. It's day number 8. From sunrise, you could do the circumcision. You don't have to wait 8 sets of 24 hours. Okay? So a child was born 6 o'clock in the evening on Sunday. Sunset is 7:47 today. So he was still born on Sunday. Everything was healthy. Everything was great. Next week, Sunday, circumcision. What happens if your parents tell you, we were in a rush taking you out of the hospital? So we did your brit on day 5. But don't worry, we made the celebration on day 8. You got a problem. A brit is only kosher from day 8 onward. If it was done before day 8, so we'll discuss in a minute what we do. That's point number one. What about if your parents tell you, oh, we could only get the doctor at nighttime? Your circumcision was done by the biggest expert and we waited till day 8. But the doctor was only available at 10 o'clock at night. But don't worry, we got you to the best doctor. So your circumcision, again, has an issue which we'll discuss in a minute.
Because it was a doctor, not a...
No, because it was done at nighttime. A circumcision at night. A circumcision before day 8. Or a circumcision performed by someone who's non-observant. Someone who's not Jewish or doesn't keep Torah and mitzvot. So on any one of those three, we have a problem. Now, you guys should make sure your students in Bnei Akiva know this. When I was with Bnei Akiva groups, I would sometimes have 3, 4, 5 a day of people who came and said, hey, my circumcision was done by a doctor before the 8th day at nighttime. One of these components makes it that we have to do a process called Atafat Dam Brit. What is Atafat Dam Brit? It is a very simple, easy, non-invasive procedure. Okay? It is... something which I've done, I don't know how many times, sometimes I do 3 a day, and, oh, really, it's like nothing. What is it? A person could really do it to themselves. Like, I'll tell you how in a second. But what it is we take the area of the cut, the area where the circumcision was, and we do a slight scratch, so you get the slightest tip, a drip of blood. You don't even get a drip of blood. Usually you have to put a tissue on it to get a drop of blood. And you do that for the sake of the mitzvah of Brit Milah, again, by daytime, right? Don't do the same mistake again. You do it at night, right? You didn't accomplish anything, right? So you do it by day, and that's it. Now, usually people are scared to do it on their own, which is not a bad thing to let someone else do it. so they go to someone else to do it. There are two ways in which it's done. The way I always did it was I took a surgical knife, because that way the person doesn't feel it. When you do a scratch with a surgical knife, I almost always the person tells me, when are you going to do it? And I say, I'm done. And they say, but I didn't feel anything. You didn't do anything. I say, no, here, look at the tissue. You see there's a drop of blood where? They look closely there. That's called a drop? Yeah, that's called a drop. You see it? That's kosher. So I say, but I didn't feel anything. You didn't have to feel anything, right? So that's the way I do it, because it's painless. The person doesn't really feel anything. There's another way to do it, which people sometimes prefer, and that is diabetics have this little thing that they squeeze on their finger that basically it's like I could bring one in. What? To check their sugar levels. So they push this little box, their disposable things, that has this little prick on the end. They push it and it pricks the person and pulls back like in a split second, because it has this very strong spring in it that pulls back the needle. And then it's a split second of pain. So some people prefer that. They do they put that in themselves, they up, and in 1 second it's gone. My process takes almost a minute, because until I find the exact location, so that's nerve-wracking. Even though it's painless, it is nerve-wracking. A lot of people prefer to use the the diabetic thing, even though it's actually painful, but it's a slight prick. It's like blowing the band-aid off. You're done.
What's that procedure called?
Hatafat dam brit. Hatafa, causing a drip, which really isn't a drip. It's not, you don't really get a drop. You get like the smallest, like a scratch, the smallest amount. Dam brit, blood of the covenant.
Where
so,
the blood,
where is it taken from? So there are two opinions. We generally go with the opinion that we go to the part just under the rim, the area down here, where, right under the rim, where the person bled initially when they did the circumcision. Now, why is it not recommended you do it to yourself? Because there are veins here. You don't want to open a vein, right? So if you can make sure the place you're doing it, they're in the vein, fine. But the reason it's recommended, you go, why do I take 30 seconds finding the exact location? I have to make sure where I'm doing it, there's no veins. Saying that's the whole thing. Technically, anywhere you scratch a person, they'll bleed. But you don't want to scratch a person here, right? It's too close to a vein. You don't want, right? So that's why it's not recommended a person do it to themselves, because you don't want to hit a vein. But that's the whole thing. So it's you do it by day. And again, there are three types of people that need it. And it's very common that people in Chutz La'aretz need it. It's very common that people circumcise their kids with either before the eighth day at nighttime or by someone not Jewish altogether. If it's a Jewish doctor, that's fine. If it's someone who's observant. Okay, so this is very common. I usually have all the instruments here because when a person tells me I got to do it, I say, okay, we can do it right now. I can, because otherwise people walk around with fears. And whenever people ask me, like, how much do I have to pay you? I say, the one thing you have to do is tell all your friends you didn't feel it. That's what you have to do. Because, what? No, there is no bracha for atafat tamrit. Now, sometimes a person comes to convert and they were circumcised when they weren't Jewish. So they do the same procedure, atafat tamrit. I mean, this is a replacement if you didn't have a kosher circumcision. So that's what's done. I will tell you that my experiences with Africa, all of Africa, that very often people come and their circumcision's not done well. And I'll explain why and how you could check in a minute. The most simplest thing you can check is, are there skin tags? We once had a guy doing conversion from Africa in his 60s or 70s. And you could see that when they cut off the skin, they left pieces of skin that got glued onto here. Like literally, you saw tags of skin stuck on. So that's okay, that's no good. The other thing you want to check is that they cut off enough. How do you know if they cut off enough? So this is a very simple check. Most people, when they wake up in the morning, most people have an erection. It's part of how people wake up in the morning. When a person wakes up in the morning and he has an erection, he takes the skin down here, and he sees if he could easily pull it up over the gland or not. If he can easily pull up a nice amount of skin over the red part, over the gland, he has a question. If when he wakes up and he has an erection, you can't really pull skin up. You're not, you have to tug and get a drop over. That's not called pulling it up. So then everything's kosher, then he's fine. Let's understand a little bit what an uncircumcised person looks like, okay? So as people... No, got to introduce one more thing before we do that, okay? But he has a question, yeah. Jumping ahead, we'll get there. We're not yet up to that. Okay, so step two. We skipped something here to make things understandable. We skipped a step, which we'll have to explain now. As a person grows, so the hole over here grows. Okay? And what happens, let's say, when an uncircumcised person urinates? So the urine has to go out of the gland and out of the foreskin. And then when he reaches the end, when he's trickling, so drops get caught inside, right? So he's urinating. And then a few drops go in here. And that's why uncircumcised people will develop infections. Because the area down here between the foreskin and the gland, dirt gets caught in there, and urine gets caught in there, And then it gets moldy, and then it gets stinky, and then it gets infected. And those infections can eventually become cancerous. So that's the simple reason why Jews don't run into that problem, because we don't get anything caught in there. It's all clear and clean. So the way Hashem created us, what happens here? How come it doesn't go into the body? So there's another layer of skin that comes up here and does this and connects to the hole. It comes from just under the gland. It's connected to the bottom of the rim of the gland, and it goes up to here. Now, this layer of skin is reddish, and it is possibly the most sensitive part of the body you have. If you want to sense what it feels like, put your tongue along the bottom and the top lip, and you'll feel up here how your lip is connected to the gums. Now you feel that little piece of skin that connects your lip to the gums? So that's what the skin down here feels like. It's like that. That's what it feels like. Now, after we circumcise a baby, so what ends up happening is there's this layer over here that's still attached, right? We said there's another layer. It's called Ara Priya. It also has a hole. Now, as a person grows and matures, this skin separates. Remember, it's attached to the bottom. But when an adult has an erection, so this skin pulls back. Sometimes the hole can be so big that it'll pull back all the way, and the person will even look circumcised. Now, what really happened there? If this is his gland, right? So the skin, instead of being up here, remember this skin went up here? It folds backwards like this. And the foreskin pulls all the way back here. So you get the foreskin wrapped up till here. Remember the foreskin's attached to the skin, and it pulls back till here. So an uncircumcised person can also look circumcised. What will you see? You'll see the gland, and this whole skin is here folded backwards, and the outer skin can also fold backwards. So technically, if an uncircumcised person wants to remain clean, what do? When they take a shower, they stick their finger in here, and they clean this out. Or they pull back the whole skin, and they clean it all out. Now, over time, this hole stretches to the point where it can pull all the way back. That's why it's not always obvious that a person is circumcised. Sometimes he looks fully circumcised. He wakes up in the morning, he has an erection, you see the gland, you say, I got no foreskin. That's not true. Because when he has an erection, you could really pull this all back up. You could pull it all back up, and so he's completely uncircumcised. Meaning the fact that you can see the gland is no proof that a person is circumcised. Now, what do we do? When we do circumcision, we said we cut off the outer skin, we make a slit in the lower skin, and fold it back. So we fold this like this. Anyone here from Germany? We have a few people here from Germany. Okay. I won't ask you embarrassing questions, but I will tell you how we do a circumcision here in Israel and how they do it in Germany. Okay? So in Israel, when we get an adult in a hospital, so we look at the skin like this. We take a hemostat, which is like a medical pliers, and we squeeze over here. We make a sign on the skin. It's all been put to sleep, right? It's anesthetized. So we make a little mark over here, and then we pull up the skin, cut it off. What do we have now? We have this scenario here, right? We have the lower skin, the membrane here, and we have the cut over here. We make a slit in the lower skin, fold it back, and then stop the bleeding, cauterize all the bleeding, and sew it up. Not on a baby, on an adult. And then we sew it up. What do they do in Germany? They don't do that. They cut off all of this skin here, and they leave a very small amount. And then they sew it up over here. Now, it's all anesthetized. He doesn't feel any of it, we hope. Okay. So now, we described the classical circumcision. Now you guys know what to do. You have a boy, he's 8 days old. You clean him up. You prepare him. You put your two fingers here, you squeeze, the gland goes down, you won't have a magen at home, so you can improvise. You take a fork instead of a magen, you put it on, okay? Now you have your magen, you cut, the skin falls down, you see this, you can tear it with your fingers, you can tear it in half, that's classically the way it was done, or you can take surgical scissors and cut it, and then you fold it down, you bandage it, you did your mitzvah. That's Brit Milah. Once upon a time, the average Jew did this. You know, it sounds scary to you, but it's very simple. You guys just got a crash course. Usually it costs 2,500 shekel, the course you just got. You guys owe Bnei Akiva one. You think I'm joking? I'm not. I'm very serious. You got a very serious crash course now on circumcisions. Other places will make it longer and give you a lot of details, and but you know what you need to know. Technically, you guys have a very clear understanding right now of what a circumcision is, okay? So step one, we covered. Now, there are a few details that might interest us, but in a nutshell, this is the story, okay? So, do we have questions still here? Because basically, we're done. Now, there are medical aspects, there are anomalies, there are preferences, there are details, there are wisdoms of how to do it, you know, more accurately, less accurately, but in a nutshell, you have the picture. Yes, sir?
This is a bit of a technical question. At a couple of Brit Milahs that I've been to, I've seen like the more help. Like, I've put something on the penis and like suck something out.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that in a minute. Yes, sir?
I have a good question, I think. Why, I'm sure this has been asked to you, why didn't Hashem make man with already circumcised penis?
Great question. We'll get to that, I hope. We'll get to that. It's a very good question. He was first, I'll get to you in a second.
What is the point of a Brit Milah again?
We'll get to that too. Okay.
Although life must be removed.
I didn't hear you.
Although life
yes.
must be removed.
Well, from this point upward, it has to be removed. Olam by definition is this and has to be removed. So now, your questions force me to go back to a story, which I usually begin with the Bnei Akiva students. For you guys in Madrichim, I skipped it. So we'll start the story. Once upon a time, many, many years ago, there was a young princess whose father wanted her to marry a specific prince. And the prince was very excited, and the king was very excited, and everyone was celebrating this wonderful shidduch, except for the princess. And the princess said, "He's a liar, he's a brute, there's nothing good about him, I will not marry him." And her father said, "I'm your father, and I know what's best for you, and you will." And she fought it with all her might, and she begged, and she pleaded, and she argued, and she illustrated, and she demonstrated, and everything she did fell on deaf ears. And her father insisted that she must marry this prince. And she said, "Dad, don't you see how biased you are? I'm explaining to you why it makes no sense, and you're not willing to hear me." And he says, "You will do it, or you will die." And she says, "Well, maybe I'll die, but I won't do it." And so her father says, "Look, this isn't a joke. You have to marry the prince." And she says, "Look, this isn't a joke. I will not marry that prince." And so her father puts her in shackles. And then he puts her in a dungeon. And year one goes by, and year two goes by, and year three goes by, and she doesn't break. And her father gets all fed up with her, and so he puts her in solitary confinement for 4 years. And after the first 3 years that she didn't break, he puts her in a second prison where she does not see the light of day. And he tells her, "After 4 years, if you don't concede, I will take you out of that dungeon into broad daylight without any warning. And going from darkness after 4 years to light will blind you. You will be blind for life. You have to stop your obstinance." And so the girl sits down and starts writing a book. And she writes a book 400 chapters long, explaining why she thinks it is dead wrong to marry this prince, and why she thinks she should marry someone else. And then her father is really upset with her. He takes her out of the dungeon into broad daylight, and a miracle happens. She doesn't go blind. In ancient times, this was a known trick, that you kept someone in darkness for 4 years, you took them out into light, they went blind. She didn't. Her father says, I'm going to hang you. And she says, but there's one person who I do love. And even though you don't value him, he's the one I want to marry, and I won't marry anyone else, because everything else is a lie. And her father says, either you marry him, or you will hang. And she says, I won't. So after all of that, they prepare the day in which she is to be hung. And they take her out to the gallows, and they put the noose around her neck. And the king tells her, I'm going to count till 10, and then I'm going to pull the latch. And you have to agree to marry him. And she says, I won't. And he starts counting. 1, 2, 3. Are you going to marry him? Nope. 4, 5, 6. Are you going to marry him? No. He puts his hand on the latch. 7. Are you going to marry him? Nope. 8. Are you going to marry him? No. 9. Are you going to marry him? The king is very tense. So is the princess. No one notices footsteps. There's a horse riding by. And then he says the number 10, will you marry him? And she says no, and he pulls the latch. And at that second, a horse rides by with the man, who she says she wants to marry. And he shoots an arrow, and he hits the rope, which she's supposed to be hung by, and she drops without getting hung. And he rides off. Now, in those times, there was a law that if they tried hanging you and it didn't work, they had to free you. So they free her. Her father sets her free. And she runs away from his kingdom. She starts traveling. But the guy who saved her life, he couldn't just make himself available now because things are dangerous. So he sends her a letter. He tells her, I'll tell you where, what country to go to. Now she's impoverished. She has to put her life together, run away from the palace. And she starts traveling. She starts traveling. She reaches the country he's supposed to meet her in. And the economy's horrible. She can't find him. And he leaves her a note. He says, don't worry, I haven't forgotten about you. And the economy's so bad, she has to leave that country. There's nothing to live off of. And finally, after many years, she comes back to that country, finds him, and they get married. And when they get married, he gives her a ring. Not a spectacular ring, but a ring that she knows he worked very hard for her. And she looks at that ring and she thinks to herself, how much did I go through to get this ring? And one day, after they're married, she's at a store and someone looks at her and he looks at the ring and he says to her, I know why you're wearing that. And she says, really, tell me why. And he says, it's in case anyone starts up with you, when you punch him in the nose, so it'll be a much more forceful punch. That's why you're wearing that ring. So she looks at the ring and she looks at him and she says, if only you knew what I did for this ring. Our story is about Avraham Avinu. He's the princess. His father is Terach. Terach said, I'm going to kill you if you don't bow to an idol. Terach gave him over to Nimrod, the king of the time. Nimrod said to him, Avram, you're a lad. Bow down to one of the idols. And Avram said, no, it's a lie. I won't bow to the idols. Avram's own father was against him. His own family was against him. Nimrod put him in prison for 3 years fighting with him. And Avram did not concede. When Avram didn't give in for 3 years, he put him in another prison for 4 years and threatened him, if you don't bow down to an idol, I will blind you by taking out of this prison into broad daylight, which he did. And then somehow, miraculously, Avram did not go blind. And he said he would kill him, and he threw him into the furnace. His father knew of all this. His father was witness to all this. And yet his father did not stand up for Avram, on the contrary. So Avram is being executed because he believes in Hashem. And at the last minute, Hashem shows up. For 7 years, Hashem didn't say anything, right? Avram spends his 4 years in prison. Our tradition is he compiled a work of 400 chapters of philosophy explaining why you shouldn't be a pagan and why you should believe in Hashem. 400 chapters Avraham Avinu wrote during those 4 years in prison. And yet, Hashem doesn't appear and doesn't do anything for Avram until the final moment when Avram is being told, will you bow or will you die? And in the face of his father and everyone else, he says, I will die, I will not give in. And he's thrown into the furnace and he walks out alive. And when he walks out alive, he is freed. And Hashem tells him, go to Canaan. So he comes to Canaan and things don't work out right. He shows up in Canaan, there's a famine, there's nothing to eat. He has to travel down to Egypt. And then when he comes back from Egypt and he finally settles in the land, Hashem tells him, okay, now we're going to make a covenant. You want to have kids? I want you to have kids. You will have the land of Israel. Here's what you have to do. Take the organ with which you have kids and slice off a piece. Now you could have kids. You're Avraham Avinu. After everything you've been through, what do you do? The Ribbono Shel Olam tells him, you want to have the most cherished child you've been waiting for? We're connected, just slice off a piece. Gets better. He goes to consult with his friends. He tells them, I've been promoting monotheism in the whole world. If people hear I did this, they're going to think I'm a fanatic. And they're never going to listen to me again. And my whole job in this world is done. So one friend tells him, don't do it. Each friend gives a different piece of advice until Mamre tells him, good idea, you always listen to Hashem, that's me in your life, you're not, you shouldn't give up now. And then Mamre says, I'll show you. He wants to be the first person to circumcise. So Mamre right away takes a knife and circumcises himself and bleeds to death. His bleeding doesn't stop. And after Avram sees his best friend bleed to death, he has to go and circumcise himself. And Avram does. Avram does. And ever since Avram Avinu, we've been doing it. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says to us, I created man so that man has an opportunity to connect to me. We have a job in this world. When Rabbi Akiva met Turnus Rufus, the Roman governor, Turnus Rufus asked him, who makes better things, man or God? So Rabbi Akiva says, man. So Turnus Rufus says, I thought you'd say God. So Rabbi Akiva says, I know you thought that. You wanted to tell me, if God made man uncircumcised, why is man doing anything to hurt God's creation? And it's not true. God created the world so that man can always have his role in making the world right. We have a job, we say it in Aleinu every day, right? L'taken olam b'malchut shakai. We have to fix the world. We were brought into a world that's imperfect. We have a job to do here. The Jew always believes he has something to do to make the world a better place. That's part of our identity. And so Rabbi Akiva says, try eating wheat. Try eating anything as it grows from the ground, right? Wheat, barley. You want to make real bread? You want to make real wine? You have to do something. Things that are grown in their nature very often are not in their best state. There are fruits which are, and then there are other things which are not. And so man has to perfect them. Same thing with the human being. Now, Ibn Ezra writes another thing, which I checked out with a zoologist a few weeks ago. Animals are born uncircumcised. I'm sorry, animals are born without a foreskin. And Ibn Ezra says, you want to know the natural form of man? The natural form of man is to be without a foreskin. So I can't tell you why Hashem made a world where everything needs to be improved upon. Why are we born where we have an evil inclination? Why is it that in all of life we have to improve things? But that's our task in this world. And when a baby's born, we are given the opportunity to put him in a covenant with his creator. I want to address it from a slightly different point in 1 second. The truth is that this topic needs a lot of discussion. I'll mention concepts which really deserve more depth, but if we focus on this, we won't get to the practical sides of Brit Milah, which was, to my understanding, the stress of this class, right? I mean, the ideological and spiritual concepts. Okay, so we'll touch on two more points. Thank you. One of our challenges in life is that we live the moment. Right? It's very alive to us. What's happening this second is very real. What's happening this year is very real. It's a challenge because technically, in the grand scheme of things, how many things do you remember from 2 years ago? How many things do you remember from 5 years ago? And when Rosh Hashanah will come at the end of this year, how many things will you remember from this past year? Now, I'll give you a small example of that, okay? How many slices of pizza did you eat this past month? Who said two? Yeah? You guys only ate the two slices we got you? Oh boy, I'm happy we got you two slices. How many slices of pizza did you eat this year? Huh? 14? Or you're not so sure. It might be 13 or 15. Where do you guys go when you're having a good time? What do you eat? Shawarma? I'm asking. I don't know. Shawarma? What? Burger? Burger. No. How many burgers did you have this year?
Between 1 and 300.
Do you really know an exact number? I'm serious. Do you really know an exact number? Can you imagine that there are people who don't know an exact number of people they've been intimate with? Isn't that mind-boggling? Man has done something which has the most meaning, which can bring a child to the world. They have no concept. Isn't that like, isn't he living like an animal? And then that means that a person has taken something which is very holy and very worthwhile and very meaningful. And I'll prove to you that even the secular world views it that way. Because if a man were to walk up to a woman and give her 10 punches in the face, then they might charge him, and they might incarcerate him for a day or two, but then they'll let him go. But if a man violates a woman, then suddenly he can see a year or two or who knows how long in prison. Explain to me what the difference is. Why is it that hitting a person, even in their private parts, doesn't carry the same weight as the act of intimacy? Because everyone understands that there's something else about this act. Everyone understands that this is not the same as just touching someone. It's not the same. We all understand that. We deny it at times in our life. We like to say it's not a big deal, but it is a big deal. And what happens in our life is that when we're very focused on the moment, that's when we can make big mistakes. That's when a person can lead a life that's very much about making mistakes. They wanted to see if they can forecast which children would be most successful in the future. And they found that the children who could save for the long run were those who ultimately, statistically, succeeded the most. It's a perspective that allows a person to save money. It's a perspective that will allow a person to invest in a degree that's more successful. It's a perspective that helps a person keep their mouth shut when they shouldn't be talking. When people tell me, I can't help myself, what they're saying is, I want to satisfy my urge, my need now. Now people say that about, I can't help myself but say Lashon Hara, I can't help myself but answer an SMS on Shabbat, I can't help myself but be promiscuous. There are many areas that a person gives himself that excuse, I can't help myself. It's not true. It's a cop-out. It's making a statement, I will focus on my pleasure of now over my long-term pleasure, over my long-term investment, over my long-term life. When a person circumcises his son, right now, the kid doesn't really know what just happened to him. In the long run, it's the best time in his life to do it. Children at 8 days old have developed within their bloodstream the blood shifts after a child's born. There are shifts in terms of many things anatomically of a child, the first month or two that they're born. On the eighth day is when the blood is most prone to coagulating properly to circumcision. A child at 8 days old doesn't need medication. If you just bandage him, he heals. Children that I circumcise, usually within 10 days, you can't even tell they were circumcised. I'm saying there are a lot of medical benefits to doing it then. But we view circumcision as a sacrifice. It's not easy for a father. You have to give over your child to be cut. And we say it's no different than a person bringing a sacrifice. It's harder than a sacrifice. We say that's why it's such a big schut to be the son, to want to have the baby on your lap. Right? There's the person who holds the baby on his lap. Ideally, we give that to someone who we view as pious, as holy, because it's a big deal to be the one holding the baby. It's like you're the altar, right? It's a hard mitzvah. It's not an easy mitzvah. When I was younger, I couldn't even look at it. I'd be the one standing in the back of the room, right? Believe it or not. Today, I do it. But when I was younger, I would be very far away. We are doing the baby a favor. We are putting him in a covenant. We are saying, I believe in self-control. I believe that I am going to do what's right. There is a God in this world. You are now a part of the covenant. I'll tell you a story. We had a student here named Daniel from Holland. And you don't know him, I don't think. Long before your time. How old are you? 18. So this story goes back when you were about 5 years old. Okay? So I don't think you know him. So he was in our gear process, and he got his circumcision as an adult. Far more difficult. Far more difficult. And he was in such pain that when he went to take a shower at the first night after circumcision, he fainted in the shower from pain. And I came to visit him, and he was lying in bed, and lying there in pain, visibly in pain. His back was turned to me, so I just sat there quietly. And after about a minute or two, he realized I was there. He rolled over, and he whispers. I couldn't hear him. So I lean over, and he says, "It's so special." Those weren't the words I was expecting. He's lying there, writhing in pain. And I said, "What?" He goes, "It's so special." So I thought he meant my visit. But I didn't think he was talking about the circumcision. After what I heard he had undergone, I said, "What is?" So he starts quoting to me the psukim from Yechezkel. He says to me, "Etched in my body is a covenant with God. I chose to do it. I am now connected to God forever." Right? We didn't have a choice. I don't remember. You know, it's been a number of years since my circumcision. And no one asked me, right? I was 8 days old, a number of decades ago. And they did it. He did remember. He made a choice. And his circumcision was complicated. And he was in a lot of pain after his circumcision. And he opened my eyes. He says to me, "From now, every minute I walk the face of the earth, I'm connected to God. I have a mitzvah that is with me, and I am His, and He is mine, and we're connected forever." Blew my mind. What a perspective on a Brit Milah. You know, we take it for granted. We just have it. We don't even remember. He didn't take it for granted. Now, if he'd tell me this 2 weeks after the circumcision, I'd hear. When he tells it to me the day after the circumcision, when he's still lying in pain, it taught me a lot. So there's a lot more to be said about this concept. There's a lot more, but I think you guys want to cover more practical aspects. If you prefer we stay on the concept of Brit Milah, there's more to be said. Should we move on to the practical? I mean, we didn't finish what happens at a circumcision. I want you guys to understand everything about what's done, and we didn't finish that yet. I think we should cover a few more things. I'm not getting a clear... yes, continue with the what happens. Okay. Practical. Concepts? Okay. So concepts it is. Okay.
Can I ask you a quick question? When someone converts, do they have to have a brit milah, or can they just get a prick, like you said?
If they are fully circumcised, then they can get a prick.
But if they're not, they have to have a circumcision.
Correct. Rambam writes, this is one of the litmus tests of conversion, that a person has to be circumcised. A person has to undergo circumcision, which is, in ancient times, they didn't have the anesthesia we have today, and I can tell you that the anesthesia doesn't always work. I've heard from numerous people who underwent it as adults. An adult circumcision is much more complicated. Okay, going with your vote, we will go on to another story. The stories, I think, if you guys can write down the headlines, are, I just want to make sure I got the majority vote. How many people want us to stick with concepts? How many people want us to go on to the practical, finish off the practical? No, okay. And Gabi is neutral. Practical, okay. We'll see if we have time in the end to get to finish off the practical. Okay. Imagine we're all on a ship. We're traveling. We don't know one another too well, but we're all traveling together. And as we're traveling, a storm hits the sea, and the ship gets shipwrecked. And everyone grabs a plank, and we make it onto an island, and everyone makes it safely. But the ship is destroyed. And we start doing a head count. Binyamin is there, Jacob's there, Meron is there, Michael is there, Daniel's there, Alon, Dovi, Baruch, Gabi, Shachar, who just disappeared, Peter, Alan, Yosef Chaim, Daniel, everyone's there, okay. So we get ourselves together, we look around the island, and we try to figure out what we're going to do. So Binyamin says, let's make a fire, because pretty soon they're going to send search planes for us. They'll have to find us. Dovi says, let's prepare weapons, because you don't know who's living on this island. Maybe in a minute cannibals are going to show up and they're going to try to eat us up alive. Baruch says, give me a break. No one's going to find us. Let's set up a new ship. Let's get together planks, because if we don't have a ship, you don't know if anyone's going to find you. You could die here. Gabi says, you guys are all crazy, because if we don't have food in about 24 hours, we're going to start eating one another up alive. Don't worry about the cannibals on the island. You have to worry about us. We have to have food. What do we do? So now, this is a very nice thing to do with Bnei Akiva, because where you're trying to lead them is to the idea that if you don't have a leader, then everyone loses. Meaning what you can develop the story is you can develop the story in the direction that Alon and Dovi and Baruch, they make up their own team and they say, forget it, we're working on building a ship. And Gabi says, forget it, I'm going with Alan and Yosef Chaim, we're going to look for food. And Binyamin says, you guys are all crazy, because if search planes come, there's no way they'll find us. Let's do something. And you find yourself in a situation where everyone loses because there isn't unity. And so the first thing you should do as a group that's shipwrecked is appoint the leader and modus operandi, how you'll reach decisions, because everything will be more productive if you work as a group. Even if you decide to split up, but that unity is critical to your success. So that's an interesting, again, you could play it out, do a pi'ula. I think it's a very important lesson in general for kids. But then you see a search plane. And you say, he doesn't see us. So you take mirrors and you try to point them at him. And you quickly try to put together a fire, but the search plane doesn't see you and it keeps searching. So you say, okay, he'll be back. But then you see storm clouds brewing. You see that the storm is coming back. And you say, there's no way they're going to find us so soon. So you take a vote and you decide you all have to go for coverage. So you take as much stuff as you can and you go searching for coverage. Now you can make the story very exciting. You go into a cave, and then there's a snake in the cave. You can make the story exciting, and there can be cannibals who show up, and you have to develop weapons. You can make the story exciting, and it could take you 3 months till you realize everyone's given up on you, and you start building your own ship. And you make it a very nice, long story about how you finally get off the island after a very exciting adventure where people's lives are almost taken and things went crazy in your life. Again, could be you conquered a tribe of cannibals, could be you developed a hut and a place to live, could be you discovered all kinds of new foods, could be whatever it is. At the end of the story, after 4 months, you guys developed the story, okay? It's the most scary and meaningful 4 months of your life. You build a ship and you set sail and you make it to dry land, and then you start saying, wait a second. There was, logically, we could have all died. And we as a group should stay together. We should celebrate that this happened to us. You recognize that there were many things that Hashem did in this journey that were unique to your survival. So you say, let's agree on something. Let's agree that every year on this anniversary, we all get together. We fly in from Australia, from South Africa, from Holland, from South America, from all the different places we live in, from Bosnia, Herzegovina. But by then, all of you will have made Aliyah. You're all going to be in Israel. But we'll all get together and celebrate this day and tell our children how we almost died on this day and Hashem saved us and made us a great miracle. And then Meron says that's not enough. Every person has to wear a hat that says on it, I survived. So that our families forever will know for future generations that the only reason we're alive was because on this day, a great miracle happened on our behalf. And Michael says, no, I want us each to wear a t-shirt. We should each once a week wear a t-shirt that says, I survived the island of, give it a name, okay, make it interesting. Okay. And Binyamin says, we should each have a flag outside our house so that everyone knows I survived. I am one of those people who made it from that. Now, you guys know, 7 years ago, a guy stops me on the street, an old man, and he asked me, do I have to fast Yom Kippur? So I said, who are you? So he picks up his shirt, and he shows me a tattoo. Actually, he picked up the side of his shirt. He had a tattoo on his side. I said, what's that? He says to me, you don't know what my tattoo is? No. Says to me, I was in the battalion with Ariel Sharon. I was in the special forces. And he starts telling me, and he starts showing me scars on his body. And he says to me, this is when we conquered this place, and this is where we snuck behind enemy lines on this place. And he's telling me stories galore. And he keeps pointing to his tattoo. I said, what is that? He says, everyone who was in that battalion got that tattoo. I said, oh no. You don't know it's biblically prohibited for a Jew to have tattoos. I didn't tell him. He's an old man. What am I going to tell him for? But it seems that special forces, I know the Navy SEALs in the United States, they have a special sign that they tattoo onto themselves, that they're a Navy SEAL. And special people in all kinds of special brigades. So Daniel says, we have to do a special thing. Maybe each one of us will cut off a piece of our ear. Something that wherever you walk around and you see someone, you'll know he's one of ours. He made it out of here. Why is it so important? Each of you say, no, we almost died. Our future generations have to know about this. They have to know the miracle that happened on this day. Pause, rewind. We'll start again. Okay? We're on a ship. Things are going nicely. There's a storm at sea. The ship collapses. We hit an island. We are the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. When we leave Mitzrayim, we each get a hat. What's our hat? Filling on the head that have a declaration. I Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. We have a t-shirt, we wear tefillin on our arm, that says Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. You don't have a flag on your house, you have a mezuzah on your door that says, I am a monotheist. We dedicate our firstborn sons, we dedicate the anniversary every year of Pesach. When people ask me, did Egypt happen? I ask them, did anything in world history happen? Because nothing in world history is documented as well as Yetzias Mitzrayim. There's nothing that has as many actions commemorating it as Yetzias Mitzrayim. We sit in a hut on Sukkot, we eat matzah on Pesach, we get together as families every year on the anniversary. I mean, the amount of things we do to commemorate Yetzias Mitzrayim, and we've been doing for millennium, there's nothing else in world history that's been documented that well. How do you know Plato ever existed? Aristotle ever existed? Beethoven ever existed? You have his music, I have my tefillin. So we commemorate, and the circumcision we've been doing since Avraham Avinu. The circumcision is an act of declaration, just like cutting off the edge of the ear. The circumcision is a declaration, I am one of his. I didn't invent it. He gave me the mitzvah. Today I know medical benefits for it, but that's not why I do it. I do it because he told me, you want to join? You want to be a part of the group? This is how you join. And part of it is also the idea that if there's one drive that destroys the world, if there's one area where a person chooses to forget the long run and chooses to forget the importance of what life is all about, it is the area of the male organ. If there is one area that man is ready to go wild and forget any meaning to life and forget himself and why he's on this planet. So when a person circumcises, what he's telling his son and what he's telling himself is, there is real value here. Could be I sometimes forget myself. It could be I sometimes don't live up to the ideals I wish I did. But the truth is that there is real meaning in this life. There is a God. And he does have demands from us. And it's not a free-for-all. And I'm willing to take the organ that is most sensitive. And, you know, my brother's a doctor. So he told me there's this condition that a person can have an erection for hours. And if they don't get medical treatment, the erection can stay for a day or two. And then they could lose all ability to have an erection. Meaning after a certain number of hours, the organ becomes very painful and they destroy their male organ. So my brother told me, now this is a very important piece of information because I got a knock on the door one Shabbos. Someone told me that they've had an erection for, I don't know, 14 hours or whatnot. And what are they supposed to do? So I said, get a non-Jew to take you to the hospital because you could lose your organ. Meaning my brother said it, that told me the story as it was relevant to something else. But medically, it was important for me to know. When a person's in danger of losing an organ, we say, use a non-Jew to get the medical treatment you need. If it's life-threatening, then a Jew could do it. If it's just endangering an organ, we get a non-Jew and we take care of the person. So anyways, my brother told me he had this 17, 18-year-old in his ward who had ignored it when it happened and showed up after 2 days and they couldn't do anything to him. And he lost the male organ, meaning he would never again be able to have an erection. So he told me that the man needed psychiatric treatment. I said, why? So he says to me, the man says, I have nothing left to live for. So I burst out laughing. So what do you mean he has nothing left to live for? What does that mean? So he said to me, you don't understand. I said, I think I do understand. But all of life is that organ? What does that mean? What does that mean he has nothing left to live for? I can understand. It's difficult. I'm not saying. I'm not making light of it. But to make that statement, there's nothing else left to live for, that really shocked me. But it was an eye-opener to me. A person can look at life that way. A person can say, all of life is about that. No, it isn't. It just isn't. And when we circumcise ourselves, when we circumcise our children, we're reminding ourselves, this is an important part of life, but I should control it. It should not control me. Many people lead their lives revolving around that. We view life as there are 10 fingers on our hands, 10 fingers on our feet. In between the 10 fingers on our hand is the covenant of the mouth. We're supposed to use our mouth for spiritual things, for Torah, for tefillah, for worthwhile things, not to speak slander, not to speak lies. We have a covenant of the mouth, what we say. In between the 10 fingers of the feet is the covenant of the Brit Milah. It's the covenant that I will lead a life of morality. If you look around the world, people allow themselves to be the most immoral, revolving around that. That's the area, the great area of human weakness. And when we do Brit Milah, we show we're in control. My desires don't control me. And I bind myself, just like when I wrap the tefillin, I say, I'm taking control of my arm and my desires, and I'm saying, God, what you tell me is what I'm going to do. When I put tefillin on my head, I say, God, I'm going to think what I'm supposed to think. I'm going to work on my thoughts. When we circumcise, we say, I'm in a covenant with you. My whole life is with you. And remember that Avraham Avinu did it when he didn't know how he would have kids. Hashem said, don't worry, you're going to have kids, but first circumcise. Okay, with our remaining 5 minutes, I suggest we go over a few practical things that you guys had a bit of questions about. Number one, when we do circumcision today, so it's called the Pirotinsky method, we stick in a probe, a dull object, it looks just like a pen, it's a dull at the end, we stick it over here, and we do that in order to separate the lower skin, the lower membrane, so that when we pick up the skin, we will pick up the lower membrane with the outer skin. Instead of cutting them twice, this way you can cut it all off at once. That's number one. Number two, you asked me about scars. So the color of the skin post-circumcision will be like this. We have the gland up here. Okay? Then we have the membrane that was folded backwards right here. So the first layer of skin under the gland, which again, by people who got a German circumcision, it's going to be a slither. By people who got a regular circumcision, it's going to be a little bit bigger. There's going to be slightly more reddish skin right under the gland. That's the aura priya. That's this skin that was bent, that was folded backwards and glues onto here. Right after that, you have another layer of skin. That's the scab. And finally, you have a third color of skin. That's the skin. That's skin color. All of them look almost the same. Unless you look really closely, you won't notice. You have to start from the stomach going up, that's skin color. From the gland going down, that's the color of the aura priya. The most sensitive part of the male organ is this, the aura priya. That skin. That's why the German way of doing it is not so recommended. Because they take away a lot of unnecessary sensitivity from the organ by cutting all of this off. When we do circumcision, we fold it backwards and it stays. So the person has sensitivity down there. And finally, the final topic is bandaging. When a baby finishes circumcision, most healthy babies will heal regardless. If you do nothing, they'll heal. But, as is always the case in medical things, we want to ensure everything's healthy. So we put a bandage around him. Bandage helps the bleeding stop. A bandage protects the cut that it shouldn't get infected. And then, after 24 hours, when we take off the bandage, we also put antiseptic cream for 6 or 7 days, or a week or two, whatever the mall tells you, until the wound heals. But all of that is just precautionary. If we keep the area clean, most babies who are healthy will be fine. If a child is a hemophiliac, if you or your wife have hemophilia in your family, you should not circumcise. Call the mohel, call the local Orthodox rabbi. There, it is not permissible to bleed to death, okay? No, you're not allowed to die, okay? So I've had more than once that people asked me to circumcise their baby and they forgot to mention they have hemophilia in the family. You have to mention it. It has to be checked. You have to make sure you're not endangering the kid's life when you're circumcising them.
Is it part of the process to check that or not?
I didn't understand.
Like, do you have to go through a process to check if the child has hemophilia?
No. Well, if there's hemophilia in the family, you check it. If there isn't, then you don't have to assume he has it. Generally, in the hospital, a child will undergo many tests. They prick him. If he had hemophilia, they should have noticed. And finally, there are children that are built differently. Look at everyone's ears. They're not the same. The shape of the ear isn't the same. The way the ear is attached isn't the same. You will notice that we don't have the same ears. Look at everyone's noses. They're not the same. Look at everyone's eyes. They're not the same. The human body is created differently, right? If you even look at the shape of the nostrils, the shape of the nose, right? It's different. Well, the male organ is the same thing. It's different. It's not one size fits all. When we come to do circumcision, different organs are created differently. Now, this applies not only to the shape of the organ, but also to the makeup of the veins. The way the veins run in the organ are different. I once came, one of the rabbis asked me to come circumcise their son, one of the rabbis of the Machon. And when I showed up to the circumcision, I saw a vein that looked like one of these veins running up straight into the aorta. So I said, oh boy, there's no way to do the circumcision without cutting that vein. So I said to the rabbi, I said, look, there's only one way to do the circumcision, but I can't guarantee you that we won't end up in the hospital because I might need hospital intervention to stop the bleeding. I don't know. We won't know till after we circumcise. Here's where I have to cut, and here's what the danger is. It should work. Everything should be okay. But I'm telling you in advance, I don't know. At this hour, is there traffic from here to the hospital? He said, no. I said, fine. How much time is it from here to the hospital? Fine. Okay. We did the circumcision. Everything went fine. Baruch Hashem, the baby didn't have to go to the hospital. But that's unusual. How often do you see a kid with a vein, a blue vein like this size, running up into the arla? They're not all created the same. So some children also have very small veins and very poor circulation to the area of the circumcision. And this can be explained at length. We don't have the time for that. As such, the rabbi said, after you circumcise, you must perform some suction to make sure that there's adequate blood flow to the area of the circumcision to ensure the baby doesn't die. Now, the rabbi said, most babies will be just fine if you don't do this. So much so that if a moel doesn't do it, no one will know that he didn't do it. Because when a baby will die, it'll be 1 in 1,000, let's say. You'll never know why. It's not something which if you don't do it on the spot, you see 1 out of 5 babies die, you know he's a bad moel. No. The Talmud says it will happen that a baby will die, and you won't be able to know that's the reason. So that's why the Talmud says if you ever see a moel doing a circumcision, and he does not do mitzitza, he doesn't ensure that there's adequate blood flow, fire him. Don't let him work. Because you won't know when he's endangering the child. It's not something you can tell in advance. So we today have two approaches as to how to do mitzitza. Rambam felt that the saliva also had a medicinal effect for the baby. And so there are those that say when you do mitzitza, you have to put your mouth on the organ, suck the way they used to do up until 150 years ago. And that's the way you do mitzitza. You spit out the blood. But the question about that is that 1 in 10,000 babies, I don't know the exact number, it can happen that the moel has herpes. It can happen that the moel has hepatitis. It can happen different things that the moel can give a disease to a baby when he does the sucking. So how common is it? Not at all. Every day you have hundreds, if not thousands, of babies that undergo circumcision and they get mitzitza with the mouth and they live and they're fine. And this is the way it's been done for 3,500 years. So you can't say it's a big danger, no one should do it. Personally, I don't do it. Personally, my tradition, the way it was done in Germany, the way it was done in many places, and the way many people do it today, is that you take a suction tube, you put it over the organ and you suck, and that's the way you ensure that there's adequate blood flow. You don't put your mouth directly on it. But again, you can't say that if a mole does it with his mouth directly, he's being irresponsible. There are too many babies every day that get it, and they all live and they're all fine. You can't say, you know, anyone who does this is wrong. My tradition is not that way. I don't do it. And you could ask them all in advance. This act of performing some suction to ensure the adequate blood flow is called mitzitza. If it's done with the mouth, it's called mitzitza bepeh. And otherwise, it's called mitzitza, the suction, bikli. We covered a lot of information tonight. If you guys have questions, feel free to call or email me. My email is machonmeir, the number 1 @gmail.com. machonmeir1@gmail.com.